not late coming, Honorable Mukarata. By now you should know I'm not a person who's late to meetings. As a person. So I did say to the secretary, he must communicate to the members that the meeting will start at 10 and not at 9:30 as usual. Because the speaker is the head of the institution. And two of the issues that had to be, I had to express an opinion and report about what is happening. So, I mean, I couldn't do otherwise. So, can we get other apologies? Where are other people? Where did other people delay? So there's one speaker.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have five apologies. The first one from Professor Mkize. She's in a dispute resolution in KZN. And then Obu Mayele, he's on study leave. Obu Dudley, she's got bereavement. Then Obu Mashabela, she's engaged on political party business. And Obu Kalyan, also attending to other matters. Thank you, Chair.
Can we start afresh? Professor Mkize?
Yes, Chair. She's attending a dispute resolution in KZN.
And from Parliament?
She did not expand to the reason.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what.
Maila?
She's on study leave, Chair.
Then Honorable?
Honorable Dudley, she has bereavement.
Then Honorable?
Honorable Mashabela and Honorable Kalyan,
don't put two people together.
Oh, okay, sir.
Mashabela?
She sent an apology that should not be attending, sir.
Is that the party political thing?
Yes, sir. Yes, Chair.
And then?
It is Honorable Kalyan, Chair. The secretary did not put a reason, but she sent an apology that should not be attended.
Where is the by elections, sir? Mkhalapa? Party political activities engagement. Honorable Pumblana?
I do not have his apology, sir.
Absent. Yeah, these apologies must be put together. They are important and very useful when you are dealing with legislation at a phase like this, because the principal responsibility of members of parliament is lawmaking, and this is more than anything else, more than motions without notice, questions to the deputy president, this is what members are here for. So, you see, if they get engaged in other things other than what they are supposed to be here for, it should be a matter of concern. People who are studying, that should be understandable. There must be a timetable to the apology. Bereavement is understandable. Mediation on a Wednesday. And the chair has not been alerted to the type of mediation that is. So it should be that the honorable member has been delegated by the speaker. If you understand what I'm saying. Delegated by the speaker to embark on a mediation. In other words, you are doing that. If you are delegated by the speaker, you are doing that on behalf of parliament. And I'm speaking to these apologies very deliberately, because some of them are actually very genuine. because people must not turn around and say that particular definition of the Foreign Service Bill, which says this and that, is in fact wrong, when they did not participate in the process in which they were supposed to input. It is their process. This bill was passed behind his back or whatever it is. But participate in itself from a party point of view is not correct. But each party can talk to their people. You see. Yes, Honorable Kota. Maninga abantu bangekho. Honorable Kota, UPM. Absent. No apology. Okay. Yeah, fana ba record njengoba ngenza nje. Honorable Lolomisa, nangabe usa sasekhona la. Honorable Hlengwa. Yeah. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You've got 9 people on us here. And we are 6. We'll do this work on their behalf, on behalf of the committee. Just soldier on. Thank you very much. Can I hear you on the agenda? We're dealing with the clause-by-clause process or phase of the bill. Committee members? Okay. You move, Honorable Raputi. And you're seconded and thirded by whom? Just work hard. Members, I was just trying to consult with the content advisor. I think let's just deal with two processes. Of course, they are interlinked. Let's have the bill in our hand. Go to page 1 of the bill. Yeah, the bill where it deals with arrangement of sections. You'll see there that it deals with definitions up to clause number 13. Because we've got to bring to yourselves the attention of all the clauses that we're going to deal with. So under definitions,
There are a number of definitions, and can I quickly just run through them? They say, in this act, unless the context indicates otherwise, there is a definition of the Director General, what it means, or what a Director General is. Then there is a definition of the department. Then there is a definition of what is a diplomatic academy. Yes.
Wasn't there submission with regards to the objective of the bill before the definition on the just under where it says bill there's an objective? Wasn't there an amendment to that, if I'm not mistaken? If I'm not mistaken, there was a submission not on the back objective on this paragraph. Yeah, I might be the long title.
Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Williams?
Thanks, Chair. I think it was the long title that the Honourable Member is referring to. Under the word bill, there was a submission to provide for the management accountability, administration and function. It was to include the word accountability in the long title. That was sufficient. Thanks.
No, Honourable Bergman, I just thought that because this is the first day of dealing with the bill, we just bring to our attention what the definitions are in all of the concepts that define the bill, what the definition is, this and this and this and this, up to number, of course that will be up to number 13, but under definitions I was just reading out all of this and see if members want to say we think this definition is actually not defining what it is or what it ought to be. Are you persuaded? Well, you could be ahead of us. Perhaps you could be ahead of us on this, but I thought it's just a necessary 5 or 2 minutes process. Yes. Then there is also a definition of who or what constitutes an employee of the department. Then there is a definition of the foreign representations in the Republic. Then there is the head of mission on page 3. Then there's a definition about what or who is a locally recruited personnel. And then there is a member of the Foreign Service. Then there's a national department. Then there is a prescribed. What prescribed means. Then there is South African mission, and then this act. So I thought that members could look at these definitions. I'm not sure if at this stage there is any member who may have picked up something in the definition, that the way it is defined by the department, the way the department has defined a particular concept is not in line with what is happening. But otherwise, these are the words that will be in the bill from clause 1 up to clause 13. Okay. Can we hear you on the employee? Is there anything that... We Yes. The amendment of the department. Are we hearing the amendment? Yeah. Pella, the process is you've got to refer to the document because such that in this process is very material, or shall or will is very material. Those who are lawyers will tell you don't put will, put shall. I'm advised that we should rather start with a long title, the bill. Now this bill is to provide for the management, administration and functioning of the Foreign Service Bill of the Republic of South Africa, to provide for the operational requirements that are suitable and supportive of the operations of the Foreign Service in a global environment, and to provide for matters incidental thereto. Maybe the lawyers will then. The amendment by Professor Van Wyk on page 7. Yeah, page 7 of the DESCOS responses. Yeah. Lea, Professor Van Wyk. Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah.
Are you there? On this one, no? Yeah. It is called DERCOS responses to the Portfolio Committee Report, 30 May 2018. Go to page 7. Well, then you see under Professor Joansi, she is proposing that we make an amendment to this long title. And the title, the proposal she's making is that amend preamble to, and it is the preamble, it's to provide for the management. You see that? Comrade Kenya, do you see that? To provide for the management, that is, put your in lapa, administration, and then accountability. That's the insertion that she's making. Accountability and the functioning of a professional. Professional is not there in the long title, no? Accountability and functioning of a professional South African So she has added accountability and functioning of a professional South African service. Now the question is whether in the long title we want to keep that which is there, and or we want to accommodate the proposal that she's making, that we say is to provide for the management, administration and functioning of. Okay, functioning is there, but I think it's accountability and professional that will be new.
Yeah.
Now, somewhere in the discussions that we took yesterday, the word professional has been coming in, even from other stakeholders. For instance, Ambassador, who's that Ambassador again? Moloi has been saying that we need a professionally oriented service, particularly referring to the heads of missions. Now, so the word has been there, the concept has been there many a times. And accountability, of course, has been there many a times. Now, if you look at the original long title, these two are not inserted there. The question is whether the committee is of the view that we should accommodate this amendment proposed by Joanne van Wyk. Over to the members.
Thanks, Chair. I think it's quite clear, as you say, that the discussions has always been about ensuring professionalism and accountability. And that's the essence. If you sell this bill to someone and have to explain to them in layman's terms, it's just to say we are professionalizing the Foreign Service. That's what we are doing, and ensuring accountability. So those two keywords can be inserted, and they are easily insertable in the long title, to provide for the management, accountability, administration, and functioning of the Foreign Service of the Republic, to provide for the operational and professional requirements that are suitable and supportive. So they are easily insertable in the long title draft. So I propose we insert them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukhalapa. Other members? Honorable Raputi?
Yeah, I think those two, is it words? Accountability and professional, they are very key to insert them on this, to provide for their management, administration, accountable and professional foreign service on the international, representation. So if I think the more English people, they must just bring it together. But those two are very key as we are professionalizing the Foreign Service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Raput. Any other takers?
Honorable Chair, Prof, just to hear my voice, that I totally concur with the colleagues. Thank you. I'm covered.
Yeah. I'm going to advise ourselves. This phase in any bill is the most grueling, because your will or your shall, your is, your are, your comma, in law, is very material. So we must be slow, and we must know what we are accepting. Of course, the lawyers are going to accept us. Now that we have supported the insertion of accountability and professional, if you look at the response of the department under this one, the department also was happy. Am I right, Ms. Tienkam? The department was in the vet. Was happy because it says this is one of the objectives of the bill. This is one of the objectives of the bill is to professionalize the service. So we go along with that. Then let's come to what I was getting into, the definition of the Director General. Thank you. members, sorry about this. I was saying that, is there anything that should be further refined, which so far has not happened, under the definitions under Clause 1? Those people who are called the Director General, Department, etc., up to this Act includes all its subordinate regulations, policies, codes, and functions, up to number 55. I don't think there's... Okay, let me not speak for you. Hey. Those definitions are fine.
An amendment from the Department of Employee.
Page.
After Diplomatic Academy.
Yes.
There is an amendment put forward by the department. Do they want to speak to it, or
on an employee?
On an employee. With the DECO's proposed amendments, yeah, they said an employee. And I'm sure it's a very important technical amendment to the word employee, just to deal with the issues of contract or career or anything, or LRPs and everything. Can they motivate for it?
Department, let's hear you. We have it here, and then we'll see whether we agree or not.
Thank you, Chair. The reason for this change is because of two comments that came up persistently during the stakeholder process. The first is that there might be a confusion between the use of the term employee in this bill and the use of the term employee in the Public Service Act. So for that reason, we added the words "for the purpose of this act" to make it clear that it's, that employee here is different from employee within the Public Service Act. The other change that was added is we added the words "or any other applicable legislation." This is because we realized that not everyone that will be transferred to missions will be employed in terms of the Public Service Act. There may be people that are employed in terms of the Defense Act, in terms of the SARS Act, in terms of the Police Act, or any or other legislation that are still members of the, that are still government civil servants, but not necessarily appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. So we added the words "or any other applicable legislation."
So it's actually an improvement of the previous definition of the employee. And if members remember, yesterday in the discussion broadly of the responses, this matter did arise when we're discussing recall, employees, misconduct, things, because there are other people from other departments. Now, I think the principal refinement here is for the purpose of this act. This is what the employee is. Come in, Ms. Honorable Khalaf.
somewhere in the text, not in the in the definitions. No? Is it there? Do you have prescribed here?
Department?
Oh, prescribed, okay.
Thank you, Chair. This is...
In the bill, it's number clause number 12.
Clause number 12 is the regulations clause, and it... So we refer both to the regulations or to the codes or directives in terms of clause 9. So prescribe is, for example, used with the prescribed requirements in clause 3, and the mechanism by way it how it will be prescribed is either through regulations or codes or directives. This is a relatively standard clause in legislation. It appears in a lot of legislation, this definition.
What I want to... Let me draw the members' attention to clause 9. You are saying it's there in terms of clause 9 as well as clause 12. Prescribed is found in the two.
It's not that the word as such is found there, but it is that the way in which it will be prescribed will either be through the regulations, which is clause 12, or through the codes and directives, which is clause 9.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's to include the definition. Yes.
I'm looking at page 5 of the bill, clause number 9. I'm looking at it, and I do see that the minister may prescribe any ancillary or incidental, blah, blah, blah. Yes. And then let's move to clause number 12. The minister may make regulations. Where is the word prescribed there? It's not there under 12. 12C. Wait. Oh, yes.
The suggestion or the recommendation for inclusion of prescribed was made by National Treasury and Department of Defense. If members look at the report that is before them, the one which has responses from the department, on page 9, the last but one block, so that we have the full history of where this comes from. Yes, National Treasury and the Department of Defense. they suggested that the definition of prescribed be included so that it clarifies what is in clauses 9 and 12. So when we move over to the department's response, the department agrees with that proposal. Hence, they have given the proposal in writing in the paper that members can see, so that we are able to trace where this comes from and where it's going. So it's in that sequence, Honourable Members.
Thank you, Contact Advisor. Thank you. Honourable Kenya.
Thank you, Sir President. That also is shown on 12 on the regulations under 12.1G. Number 20, that is talking to any ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter that it is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this act. That is 9, that is 12.
So we agreed to
12.1G.
Prescribed as proposed by the department, it's in the bill, we agree to that. Okay. Then the next one is acquire. Neighbor? Yeah. Plus one under definitions is acquire, but this acquire is proposed by the Department of Public Works. On page 9. Then it says, includes definition of acquire in the context of new proposal on clause 8 as follows. Acquire in relation to an immovable asset means acquisition through construction, purchase, lease, and acceptance of a gift outside the Republic for use by the Foreign Service. And then DERCO agrees with it. Before I express my view on this, DERCO, you have now shortened. You have now shortened the definition of acquire. DERCO.
Thank you, Chair. If the members, the honourable members, were to look at the definition of acquire in Kiama, this is basically the same. With the definition of acquiring Guyama as it relates to national government. That is effectively the same definition.
So you are saying that this definition is consistent with the definition of acquire in the Kiama Act. Where is that Kiama Act? No. The point is that I must draw the attention of the other members to the specific page and to the, because I said to the Secretary, bring the Kiama Act so that we can refer to it. There are copies. Do you have them, members? It's called Government Immovable Asset Management Act. Yeah, there are too many papers, of course, yeah. So, is your hand up, Honor Kenya, on this one? Ubona ngawo amaphepha wakho awele ngaphambili. Ubonela amaphepha wakho angawe. Okay. No, then you will come back because the hand of Rahman was up before you. Honourable Rahman?
Chair, thanks. I just wanted to insert what we had said yesterday, the, in terms of movable property as well, that is there a possibility to possibly include, and maybe the way to qualify it is to give an asset value. So let's say an asset value above the price range of 5 million or whatever the case may be, something significant, that we would include that, because let's say a gift is given from the Queen and it's a priceless, it's a painting that's worth £1 million, that could end up being that could end up being 18 million rand. So is there a way that we could possibly incorporate that, and then that would further go to my submissions later on?
Okay, Honourable Kenya, were you on the same matter or something else?
Same matter, but I don't know whether. Just to
bring it nearer to you.
Yeah. I was just going to say, acquire in relation to an immovable asset. Also, looking at the 8 that talks to asset, the clause 8 that talks to asset. Now, I just want to check if we say. We said that each word is very important. Yeah, I just want to check if now we are saying we are removing the immovable property.
No, what you're discussing, acquire. And they will
what
say...
means, all definition, Gani. I'm over all definitions.
Yes. The department was saying that the definition of acquire is consistent with the definition in the Kiama Act, which we have given you, which is page 4 of the Kiama Act, number A. Yeah. Remember, the department can say what they are saying, the content advisor. You must refer to a specific concept in a page and say no, because you've got to own up at this thing.
Can I
you want to refine better just before Onam Khalapa, Ms. Steenkamp wants to come back.
Thank you, Chair. Just two comments. If the members refer to the definition of acquire in Giyama, subparagraph A of that definition as it relates to national departments, everything from that definition has been included here except expropriation, because South Africa will not acquire immovable property outside of the country through expropriation. We can't. It's within another legal framework. It's not within our control to expropriate. So it's the same to the extent that it applies to foreign assets. And then just to address the question of the Honourable Bergman, we also, as part of the package that DIRCO and the DPA is in agreement on, is also to include the definition of immovable property or immovable assets. Immovable assets. To make it, and also then, if you recall from our discussion yesterday, to change the heading of Clause A to immovable assets, to make it clear that what we're dealing with here is immovable assets only. Questions such as movable assets are dealt with in terms of the Treasury regulations, as subject to audits, and all of the other types of assets have already regulations in place that, in our submission, works well, and there's no problem from our point of view on those assets. So what we're focusing on here is the immovable assets only.
Why are you saying that the concentration is on immovable assets? When in the same definition of acquire in the Kiama, it says acceptance of a gift, and in the proposed amendment of the department, Ms. Steenkamp. And then, I'm not done yet. it says list and acceptance of a gift. You still have a gift outside the Republic. Now, a gift can be mobile and immobile. They can give you land, they can give you a house, it's immobile. But they can give you a paint, a what did you say, Honorable Bergman? An art, yeah, you see, they can give you a what of the Queen, which costs 20 million. So, but if you tie us to the word immovable, then the insertion of the word gift must not, gift must not, must not be understood as a gift that will be immovable. It might be movable. It can be cows, or no, not cows, cattle. Well, there are cows among the cattle. Yeah, any takers on this one? I guess this one. Mukhalapa?
Chair, I get your point, but the essence is we're dealing with the bone of contention, which is property.
Yeah.
All other things are done through the treasury regulations. The gift of a car, of a cow, of a stature, of a painting are done through the regulations of national treasury. This one is the bone of contention between Public Works and DECO. It's ownership of the property and the land. It deals with those two key issues. But I want to ask also on the definition in Giyama, it says further exchange or transfer of custodianship between custodians. Why is it not applicable within us? Because it goes to the issue where there can be a gift, and then that gift is a land or it's a property, and then there must be exchange or transfer of ownership. So why is it not included today in our in the because of the amendment of the word acquire?
Honourable members, when they come to the definition of immovable assets, there even rights appear. So I think it will respond to Honourable Mukhalapa's brief. It's under immovable assets definition. Yeah.
No, what I was going to say, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun and confuse ourselves, was that now that there is this definition acquire, I'm not going to take you back to history, but I want to assume that immovable property outside the country was acquired by South Africa by buying land or buying houses or buying offices for purposes of international relations. Now, in terms of Giyama, the Giyama Act, all properties of the state are under the custodianship of Public Works. Now, yeah, I'm going to correct some of them. Make my mistake. Yes. Now, the department says that in this bill, and that is on page 5, says that property which is outside the country will be under DERCO. Property which is outside the country, which means that in its understanding, the property of the state which is in South Africa will be managed or will be under Public Works. That's how, when I was looking at clause number 8, I understood the department. Then there was the word vest. Where is it now? Line 4. Yeah, 9. Are you Miss Stenkamp and Tevet on page 5 of the bill, the old bill? Like I was saying, I'm not intending to confuse ourselves, but I was saying this is how I understand that property outside the country, Serco. That's what you seem to be saying. Property inside the country, then you say any right in respect of such property and the management and accountability thereof must rest in the minister. And I think this, the minister here is Minister of International Relations. Now, does Kiyama say this? Because when Public Works made a presentation the other time, and I think it's last year, they actually took issue with this, that the bill must not say it will vest under the minister until Kiyama has been amended to say what the department wants us, want this bill to say. I'm not sure if, yeah. There was that lady who picked some quarrel around this, that that perhaps, well, she didn't say that, that perhaps we must propose that Kiyama be amended in this section to say that property which is outside the country is under the Minister of International Relations, and all what accountability shall rest in that minister. Property which is inside the country is Department of Public Works. All accounts shall rest in the minister, and the minister being Public Works. So I thought when we come to clause 8, I'll try to want to make this understanding. And I'm sorry again to jump the gun. It's because we as a committee, when we come to clause number 8, must make a particular proposal. And the wrong one that I have for now is that allow Derko to run with the property outside the country. And allow, well, run is not qualified. And allow Public Works to run with the property inside the country. Yesterday I was bringing in something that could be a problem. I was saying that Public Works has got in-house expertise. It has got engineers that can deal with for the purpose of South Africa. But it doesn't have such expertise for the purpose of all the chancellors outside the country. So let it leave that responsibility to Derko, which Derko will use. If it's in Russia, it will use the Russians. If it's in Swaziland, it will use the Swazis. Now, maybe we'll discuss acquire, and then we'll discuss also clause number 8, which deals with asset management. I've brought them together, Mara. I'm sure you understand what I was trying to say. Are there any takers, Honorable Kenya?
That's why, Chairperson, also I thought of bringing it together, because I noticed that more or less it's overlapping. For example, what you are saying now, it talks to that, as we are saying, there are two ministers here, and there are two ministers, what is going to happen abroad if we say Public Works? We know that Public Works has got the capacity, as you are saying, but Derko has got money. Now, how do we make the ends meet there? So that's why I said also, really, I was talking about the issue of that name property, because I saw that at the same time, it will overlap on the issue of definition when we are talking about this clause 8. So I'm covered what that you are saying now, because that's how I saw it at first. Hence, I made the attention to clause 8 at the beginning of this definition. Thank you.
I would just
advise that we, since we are still on definitions, Chairperson, when we get to clause 8, we'll get to connect, you know, all the aspects under that clause, because it's a very important clause. But at the moment, since we are on definitions, and the next definition, in fact, the proposals by Public Works, the next proposal from Public Works is movable assets. So if maybe the committee goes into that, so that when we get to clause 8, they are able to tie them together, it will help.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say that your understanding of what we want to achieve here is absolutely correct. And also let me just say that what we are aiming here for is actually the authority that are currently with DPW as far as immovable properties are concerned abroad. We are discussing exactly the aspect of that, and we propose that the authority in that regard should shift to the Minister of International Relations. We have therefore proposed, and you are correct in your recollection of the problem with vests, the property vest in the Minister, or we actually changed that now, and when you come to clause 8 you would see how we have now catered for that concern, and we acknowledge that concern. The issue for us is just to make sure that as far as the construction, the acquisition, the lease, the disposal of properties abroad, that is handled by that decision, and it can be in consultation with the Minister of Public Works, are then given to the Minister of International Relations. So you are correct. For properties in South Africa, the Public Works will be in full control, and then for properties abroad, that would be then within the domain of DIRCO. Currently, the system is working that way, that for all the properties abroad, we have all the responsibilities. We have more than 1,000 lease agreements at present running abroad. Public Works do not have the ability to sign those contracts within those foreign jurisdictions. So they acknowledge that and has already, for years and years, since 1999, transferred all those responsibilities to DIRCO, but the decision making power is still with Public Works. So when there's properties that need to be disposed, like in Namibia where there's problems with those properties, it can take years for that department to kick into action, to actually do something with those properties. So there are many state properties that are problematic that you know about. And that there's no reason why it is not looked into. It can even be an embarrassment. We have received notes to say, your property is so dilapidated in this very grand suburb, you are damaging the property value. So, but, you know, if you don't understand how those jurisdictions work and how the foreign relations are also conducted through a nice building and upkeep of your building. So if you don't have that sensitivity, it's just another state building. And we want to make sure that responsibility are now and that authority is now given to the Minister of International Relations. And as I said, on ministerial level, there's no problem. On DG's level, there's no problem. It's just that we need to find the correct wording. And this committee, I believe, is best placed to help us in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that further input, Ms. Advocate Silver. Already, when you use the word it's an embarrassment, already the new minister Sisulu told me that I don't know where they met with President Hage in Go. Now it could be that President Kinkoff may have raised the same matter with the previous minister and ministers. But the minister was saying to me, hey, I would be happy if you go to Namibia because President Kinkoff says there's your old property here and they will have to give them security and it's dilapidating here because South Africa, remember, South Africa was in charge of Namibia from 1980. So it's not surprising that if there's South African property anywhere in the world, it will be Namibia. As in land, as in offices, as in so many things. I mean, 1918 to 1990 is many years. So now that they are independent, something must be done about the property that belongs to us. But what if that property is old? So a decision must be made to dispose of it. And where the department must dispose of it and its hands are tied by Giyama, then that makes things very unfortunate. And as we say, the property is dilapidating them. But indeed, yesterday at night when I was looking at this, I was going to ask the department something legally, that until the department is going to be empowered by this bill, which will become an act, under what authority did it sell property, let's say from 1994, was it legal? How did it acquire? Yeah, that's. And if it acquired, how did it release? Leasing is something else. Selling, for instance. Did the department ever sell property between 1994 and now, when this bill has not become an act, under what authority? Just for my own knowledge. Advocate Tivet?
Yes. In 1999, the then Minister of Public Works, the late Minister Skuiwa, wrote a letter to... Skuiwa. Wrote a letter to Minister Nzo to transfer that authority to the Department of International Relations. At that stage, it was still Foreign Affairs. So that delegation happened, but that was later years when there was the issue of trying to sell. I think it was a property in Germany. I don't have the correct facts on what property. That delegation was then challenged to say that it is not possible for one minister in this way to transfer an authority to another minister, because this is, in terms of the Public Service Act, this is only the president can change the mandate from one minister to another. So that there was, as far as I know, there was an investigation into that particular aspect, and that was also the legal opinion that came was that this is not possible. And since that time, there was no movement on that. So the mechanism that we had was that you write to Public Works to say to them, this is an urgent matter. But you know, their focus is nationally, so if they have to choose between doing something for a hospital in South Africa and thinking about the property in Bonn that windows are not closing properly, their priorities are different. But those have impacts on our international relations, and it's also wasteful, because you have property standing empty that you have to manage and upkeep and all of that. So that is what happened. Well, we still have that authority, but as far as disposal is concerned, it is saying there is no movement around that DPW is in charge of that process. And that's why we came now with this solution to that administrative problem.
Okay. Well, that explanation, that at least there was that thing between the ministers, but of course the legal opinion was, be careful.
Yeah, perhaps when we get to clause 8, we will deal with the issue of the presidency. I guess that's where it comes in. That's where we'll do the wedding. We'll think about it. But it might mean that with concurrence or a presidential proclamation, this, or in consultation with the president. Because of Advocate DeVette said there was a gentleman's agreement between the two ministers, but it was challenged in a purchasing or disposing of a property in Germany. So it might be that now you might have good faith between the two ministers. But what happens if there are new ministers that come in and there is that challenge? Because of that example, it's a classical example that things agreed, Nzo and Skweyi agreed but when the government changed, the other ministers had a different view. So perhaps with a presidential consultation or presidential proclamation, then can we assist? Can we be able to insert it there? Because if we talk of amending Kiyama, then it have a bearing on it, on our bill as well. It means public works must start their own process of amending the Kiyama Act, which will tie us.
Yeah, I think we now have overstayed this definition acquired, but now we agree, no? We agree with the formulation as we see it. Okay. Then we have so agreed on this. I'm going to request a stapler. My documents are good. No. I've got notes on this one, so I don't want to change it. Page 10. Page 10 of the... Page 10 of the report that we were discussing yesterday, where you are going to find something about the movable assets, and then 1, 2, 3, 4. Definition number 4 under DESCO's proposed amendment. You see that? Okay. DESCO says immovable assets means land or an immovable structure on land or rights in such land or immovable structure. Is this being said by public way? The content advisor says this proposed amendment by Public Works is being agreed to by DERCO. If you look at the report we're looking at, is on. Arrow Kenya, are you with us? There are three documents that go together here. Is the bill itself, then it is this one, and then the report we're looking at yesterday. It says on page 10, include definition of immovable asset in the context of the new proposal. Da, 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 da. Are we fine with that? Are we fine with this?
Yeah.
It's not that the chair doesn't want you to be fine with it. But at least ultimately it does attend to the challenge with that we have had. Then Kiyama. Then it says include definition of Kiyama being the government immovable asset, da, 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 number 19 of 2000, and then DESCO agrees with this proposal. What is the proposal? Kiyama means the Government Immovable Assets Management Act 2007, Act number 19 of 2007. There's no problem on this. But then, where does anyone, Kiyama or something, say that the property outside the country will now vest under the... I mustn't use words I don't understand. Will now resort under the custodianship of DERCO? Is it the bill or is it Kiyama? Where is someone transferring officially that authority, so that in future there is clarity of understanding? Stenkamp, or your assistant, before Stenkamp you come in, yes.
Chairperson, that is the gist of
clause 8 of the bill. That's where, yes, when you get to clause 8, that's where that transfer is going to happen.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm.
Okay, we are fine with the definition on Yama then. This act, one more.
It says if there is a conflict between Public Service Act and the Foreign Service Act, and it's with matters relating to a foreign service, this act, which is the Foreign Service Act, will prevail.
Yeah, that English is complicated. If it was understood in the African cultural context, and you come to my house and this is how we are doing things, our culture and everything shall prevail. Guamasangola. That's what it says.
Can I ask Kalapa? If DECO can stipulate in the first sub-clause to include Public Service Act, meaning to say, subject to the provision of this act, the conditions of service of members of the Foreign Service must be governed by the law governing that employee's conditions of service. And then, because the bone of contention was whether there is a conflict between Public Service Act and the Foreign Service Act. So, will it be prudent to put Public Service Act as well? Or is it covered? I'm on the amendments. Yeah, amendments by the department. Yeah. Is it? Are you open for that?
Not only public services, but police also the army that are governed by their
Okay.
Okay. Our members now agreed to the definition of this act. We're discussing 1 and 2. 1. Subject to the provisions of this act, yes. Are we agreed to this? Then 2.
What was explained when while you were consulting is that what number 1 is general. Honorable Mahalapa was suggesting that maybe Public Service Act should also be inserted in 1. So we were, the explanation was that under 1 is because you have different categories of employees. Some will be coming from defense, from police, and from public service itself. So it's everybody, so long as they are within the ambit of the foreign service.
Then number 2.
To your embassy, then it must provide consular services, etc., etc. So I was thinking about distress as stress.
A concern which was raised on page 16 of the report by Home Affairs. So DECO is proposing a new, in order to address the confusion which Home Affairs was alleging, there is confusion in terms of it was like DECO now was undertaking their own responsibility, their own competencies, even in the country. So DECO suggested that, okay, they will have a new clause, which is the one that Chairperson, you're referring to. So I think maybe South African citizens in distress, this is what you're saying, whether any other word could be used which will still have the same similar meaning.
Well, I have no quarrel with distress, but I realize that any person outside the country may have a particular challenge, and they can always run to their own embassy.
Actually, Chairperson, I don't think it's only South Africans.
stress who can require assistance. So I don't know, maybe the department is going to address that, because it's all South Africans who are abroad who can access the mission for assistance, yeah, for consular services.
Yeah, Chairperson, as you have already alluded, that the Foreign Service is to render service to any person in who is abroad. I don't know why you put it this distress. I think let's take out that in distress. It should say render consular services to South African citizen abroad and consular notarial services in line with the guidelines for the provision of consular services. The distress issue, I really don't know why the distress, because wherever there is, whether good or bad, you run to your master when you are outside the country.
No, with distress law comes from the proposal made by Home Affairs. So in the formulation that they are making, then they have accommodated Ikamalaga distress. Department, do you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Chair. And actually, we agree with what you've said. You're absolutely right, and the committee absolutely right. We have no objection to removing the words in distress.
Diplomatic word, or in terms of consular services, or is just a semantical word? Do we have to put it in terms of the diplomatic wording, or is it just the word that is there?
Thank you very much, and thank you for bringing this to our attention. This was a result, the text here was a result of the fear from Home Affairs, that because they also use the term consular services in South Africa for the issuing visas and all of that, they were fearful that because we now talking about consular services, that this would now be the same, we will take over their function, which is obviously not so. Consular services in international law has a particular meaning, but it does not refer to in distress. So what we have, and actually we've added later on to this proposal in line with the guidelines for the provision of consular services. So in that guideline, one of the things that the services we would render would indeed be to those in distress, but it would also be for a lot of other activities. So I think the committee is correct to remind us this has been a long time coming, this particular one, so we haven't really interrogated this again. The committee is correct by identifying this word in distress. It is not a diplomatic word. It will in any case be covered in this guidelines and provision. So from our perspective, if we say something like render consular services, we can include to South African citizens. We are flexible, you know, if you are a South African resident, you know, permanent resident, we might also look at your situation. So render consular services in line with the guidelines for provision of consular services would include many other things, including distress, but many other actions. So we would be absolutely agreeable if the committee goes that way of changing this paragraph.
Chairperson, with his explanation, especially that we are in Home Affairs, but I don't remember us discussing this word, this distress word. But really, it means that we must agree to remove it, because as much as Honorable Debbie has said that you go to your mission, whatever you've got, whether you've got pain, you've got a debilitation, sorrow, whatever, anxiety, you go to your mission, just like going to the hospital when you are sick. So really, I think there's no need for this word to be there. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Rob.
Thank you very much.
clause number 3.2, requirement for members of the Foreign Service. Page 18 here. Mm-hmm. Members, in the report that we discussed yesterday, page 18. Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork there. Mm-hmm. Could look like.
The DECO
proposed amendment is it in two parts or in three parts? It's A and B, and then B has got Roman figure 1 and 2. And it was an issue about people who can be employed in the Foreign Service.
On page 18.
Just a moment, Ms. Denkamp, just a moment. Want the members to be with us. It's page 18, number 3. You see there. Then it talks about the requirement for members of Foreign Service. You see that one. Then there was this, the issue of citizenship. Pursuant to the Public Service Act, permanent residents and not only citizens should qualify for Foreign Service. There is a court judgment confirming this situation. Then the department has responded to this proposal by the DPSA. What was the proposal by the DPSA? Was that perhaps at the category of heads of missions, it should be, that's the committee here. So it is this one. It's a response of DERCO. Now, has DERCO changed the response that is written here, Ms. Steenkamp, on page 18, to a refined formulation which we see on this one, following what the DPSA was saying about nationality?
Yes, this new draft is to address the concerns on nationality that was raised by the DPSA, and also the concerns about the process to choose officials from other departments to go to the mission. That some of the departments raised issue with DERCO asking if our original drafting meant that the Director General of DERCO will now choose officials from other departments to go to the mission, which clearly wasn't our intention. But as we explained yesterday, DERCO's DG should sign off, should give approval before that person can go. So, I see that there's a small typo, a gremlin that crept into this document last night, on DERCO's proposals document, the three pages. At the top of the second page, that last line that reads, approval for transfer has been granted by the Director General, that should be a Roman numeral 3.
Content advisor?
Chatterton, I was saying the committee maybe should start with 3.1. Ms. Stengel is talking to 3.2. 3.1, I don't think the department can do any suggestion there. It's for the committee to actually pronounce itself on whether it agrees with the fact that only citizens should be
go into, I mean, should be members of the Foreign Service, and whether permanent residence, as public service was suggesting, should also qualify. So this is a decision that has to be taken by the committee and guide the drafters what should be put there. So there are two issues here. It's head of mission. What we found in Canada is that for the head of mission in particular, it has to be a citizen. And now members, when they were discussing that column which is in between, this issue came and the members discussed it to say there is no way that a non-citizen would form part of Foreign Service. So the members have to pronounce on that now before we pass to 3, before we go over to 3-2.
I thought that the department yesterday, in their response, they said nationality is not an issue when you want to go and work at DICO head office, but it is an issue when you have to get posting. So meaning a non-citizen cannot be posted abroad. That's the interpretation. But they can only work at the head office. Is that what the interpretation, is it correct?
Yes, Chairperson, but the committee has to take a decision, to say, yes, Chairperson.
If it's legal and it's in order, then do. We then have to put it there.
Department? Nothing? Committee, can I hear you? I think the content advisor was summarizing it, has summarized it well. No non-citizen can represent South Africa outside the country. But if you have got a particular skill and you are here in South Africa working, you can go and work in Telco and assist us with our skills, but you can't be our ambassador. So we're agreed.
I'm not sure if we're putting anything different to what they have already put in the original bill, where it says only citizens of the Republic employed by the department or by another national department who meet the prescribed requirements are eligible to become a member of the Foreign Service. Is it not the same thing?
Through you, Chair.
Yes.
It's the same thing, but since there was a challenge by DPSA, the committee has to pronounce on it to say, then what do you say as a committee on that issue?
Okay. We agree. And then... what does 3-2 say? 3-2. Requirements for members of the Foreign Service. There is A, B, and under B, Roman figure 1 and 2. Is there anything that you find that we could refine better? Any formulation that is Honorable Bergman?
Chair, I got an interesting call, and I'm wondering whether this is maybe where this person has picked it up. they said that there was a bit of unhappiness in the department, and maybe the clarity should be sought here in that, as we understand it, if you posted, let's say you're on a deputy director level in Durko, and you now posted abroad, you retain that deputy director position whilst you are abroad, and you're still getting paid a salary from Durko, and that post is frozen, it cannot be utilized, and abroad you're being remunerated in a sense, it's a remuneration that you're still getting an allowance that you're getting in that country's currency. This this paragraph does nothing to clarify that. Would I be correct in suggesting that this is possibly the contentious clause that in this situation, because there's no prescription on this, there's no direction, if that is the case, and I'm not sure if it comes at a later stage. I don't recall seeing it coming at a later stage. But if I can get guidance on that through you, please.
Thank you very much. Honourable Rapport, did you also want to seek clarity?
I'm going to be out of order. I'm sorry, but just listen to me. Because we've got high rate of unemployment in South Africa. And also working, also serving in the Committee of Home Affairs, we should really prioritize as our nationals to work in DECO. Critical skills, they are the prerequisite. Because here, I think to work in DECO, unless it's a critical skills, if we can say the nationality requirement is not a requirement. Yeah, not really, but I just wanted that you must think broader so that what is being said there, because I think really working there in DECO is not a critical skill. We need critical skills for people to work in DECO, because here it says the nationality requirement is not a requirement for employment in DECO. So I think here we must say that nationality is a prerequisite to work there, because we must be able to, take our own. So I'm sorry, just pack it there and think it very critically.
Well, we've already taken a decision.
No, but I'm just, I understand.
It can be parked, Honorable.
Okay, no, fine.
Honorable Rapoti, the committee has just agreed that, there are two things there, that nationality or citizenship of South Africa is not a requirement to be employed in the Department of International Relations, in DERCO, in South Africa. But you cannot, as a non-citizen, be posted outside to be a head of a mission or to go and work there as a non-citizen of South Africa. And after a discussion, we have come to that determination that we have said we agree with this. Now, when we are on 3-2, then you go back to that one. But the decision is taken already on that one. No, there's a decision already. So when you say, think about it, I'm not sure if you are referring to the chair, because the decision must be taken by the committee. And we say we agree with that. By the way, if you say you don't, I'll have to take the matter to a vote. Yes. Because that's what it means. If your right to differ is strictly reserved, then it must be tested in a vote, which will be unfortunate. It will be very unfortunate. And it comes after the fact, after the decision was taken already, by the way. No, in this instance, there must be no lack of clarity as to what the decision was on a matter like this. It cannot be, it's never done that way. Because it's a Puma last night with the city, and you will continue to mean a bit sugar. So, but Bushuga, we want Abanya Bafu Melena Nganyente. We want with his Ovanjan, Rapoti. And we are not necessarily right that because we must solve the problem of unemployment, we cannot take a non-South African citizen to work in DERCO. That assertion would not necessarily be correct, and not only for South Africa, for many other countries. There is what is called in emigration, selective recruitment. But it is also put in other terms as brain drain or brain gain. Now, all countries, to serve their own national interest, actually do give citizenship to people from all over the world that have got particular skills. The USA does that. You find that there are many people who are given citizenship. They were recruited from Japan, etc., etc. First, if you go to a country like the USA and you are a top scholar, that's why in South Africa there was a scholarship called Fulbright Scholarship. If you are a top scholar here at VETS, they give you a bazaar, you go and do MBA there, then they, after they give you, offer you citizenship. So they've been doing that as part of the brain gain for America, which was a brain drain for, you know, the countries that pay less. Another is that, no, I just want to speak to that. Soccer, for instance, the same thing happened. The countries that are rich, European Union, etc., they recruit the best players, give them citizenship, because these are the best players. South Africa has recruited into the lecturing staff of the many universities in South Africa from various countries. They are already here. Now you cannot select there, go outside others, whether you're talking about energy or you're talking about the education sector. There are people who are here who brought skills that we didn't have. What we have said here is, we have agreed to, is that you can't represent the country as a non-citizen. And I think it's a standard thing in there. No, but I'm trying to persuade you with other examples. Don't be irritated. I've had to. Okay, we were getting into 3.2. Page 21 of the report of yesterday, ne? Yeah. Defense, DTI, Home Affairs, what is NP? Yes, Honorable Bachmann.
I just get the clarity from the from our officials on what I've raised.
Thank you, Chair. It is correct that that we have questions about the ranks and how it influences your progression possibilities if you are posted. What, and this bill will exactly now create that opportunity to regulate this. In government, there are just the rankings are basically, you know, you're an official, you're a clerk, or you are an assistant director, or a deputy director, or a director. Now, when you go abroad, those rankings, those designations, does not exist. You are then a first secretary, second secretary, third secretary, or a counselor, and so on. And the department now had to tailor-made a system to say, okay, if you're a counselor, you're more or less a deputy director. But what now happens is that in terms of your employment conditions, you are appointed as a deputy director in South Africa and you get your salary for that. When you go abroad, you don't get a salary. You get cost of living allowances. So, and your post here is not frozen. This is frozen. It is. This makes it even more essential for us to have this bill. So what happens now is they post you to London, a colleague from London comes back, that colleague fills your post. So it is this rotation that the department has to manage. But when it gets to your progression in terms of the public service, the fact that you are 4 years abroad does not count for you as far as your progression is concerned. So it is a big mess. It is something when you are here in South Africa, you get you get, when you are abroad, you get your annual increase, but you do not have any possibilities of a promotion. You have physically, for that 4 years, you cannot apply for a post. You must wait in for a promotion. So that is the situation, and the department wants to, by creating a system that are tailor-made for the foreign service, to deal with that discrepancy, so that you are actually, although they would say that you get your foreign service allowances for that period, you are supposed to cover your cost of living. So that is a discrepancy. It is a matter of grave concern to officials, because they look at the progression in your career. So if you're abroad, you sort of abdicate the right to apply for a position. So if I go abroad today and they advertise a post that I can apply for to promote, I cannot, because I am abroad. So that is the difficulty, and the department wish to regulate that.
Chair, based on what we've just heard now, I think that's very concerning. So I think the first question we need to do in the protection of everyone is, where is this raised in the bill? Is it something that should be raised in the bill? And where is it raised in the bill? Secondly, is there something new that we're proposing here by virtue of the bill? Is there something that in practice is being changed then by virtue of the introduction of this bill?
No. The matter, if you look at page 21, comes from the stakeholders. The stakeholders are Defense, DTI, Home Affairs, and National Treasure. That's where the matter came from. As of yesterday, when we're looking at the responses of the department, it's blank there. Now, they are coming with this formulation that responding to these issues that were raised by these stakeholders, this is what can be said. This is what can be done about those concerns. Can I understand something? Either you are saying that, but I'm not picking it up, or Advocate DeVette was saying it, but I'm also slightly picking it up. And it is that when you are outside the country, say you are getting 20,000 as a DG in South Africa, or let's say director, but when you are posted to France, you get 27,000, and it's called cost of living because you are outside the da-da-da-da-da-da. And if anything happens that compel you to come back, let's say that your contract has not been fully served and you have not misbehaved, so you get sick, then you have to come back to South Africa, then you are an employee of DERCO, now they continue to pay you because you've just had to come back. Now they remove the 6,000 or the 7,000. I thought that is normal, because you know that this top up was because you are abroad. But when you have come back, you can't say, no, but where is that 7,000? I know that you got used to that salary, but you are no longer in France, you are back to South Africa, and you are not discharged. You are still in an employee of DERCO. So they'll give you what they give other South Africans at that level. Honor Bergman, is that what you were trying to find out?
Where the gray area, yeah. I just want to know how it's covered in the bill.
I remember, was it COSAT or the PSBC, something, somebody was also complaining about it.
No, yeah, I'm trying. Thank you. Just the other one, to build up on the honourable members' areas that are a little bit grey, even the department is not clear. But also the other one from my side then, because you have suspected post, you hold it in a way, in a space, you freeze it because you are abroad for 4 years. If your 4 years expires, Chair, because automatically the government is not going to froze your post here. They have to filter because what needs to be done. But when you come back also, I don't hear that. Does it talk to that? Where do I go to? because I become a surplus, because also from DPSA experience borrowing from what she has said, some other departments have got DDGs that we have even today begging to understand, probably. So I'm saying in this space also we must have clarity, because we're dealing with human beings as well, because they're servicing the country while they're in the contract, but also there must be that guarantee that you're not going to be mentally redundant and be paid doing nothing. Thank you, Chair.
That is that if that person gets posted and they continue to be paid their salary, while on the other hand there is some homebody that have been put on the same post and being paid the same salary, and the person gets the cost of living allowance as well. I mean, this is draining for the piscus. It's double dipping. And when they come back, as my colleague says, what happens then? It's two posts, it's two people. One homebody and the actual person. So what happened? Are we having ghost employees in DICO?
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe a practical example will be helpful for the committee. So we've got, I'm taking randomly, we've got a directorate for economic affairs in our multilateral section. We've also got a directorate for science and technology. So now person A is at the economic development desk, as we call it, and they get a posting to Geneva. So they're still on Durko's establishment, so they're still an employee of Durko. They get there, to use the chair's example, 20,000 rand a month. But now they're in Geneva, which is one of the most expensive cities in the world. Their 20,000 rand, first of all, is not going to be able to maintain them for the time that they're there. So then Durko, and this is done through collective bargaining, through the DPSA currently, before the bargaining council, they get a cost of living allowance, COLA, to assist them in covering their costs while they're in Geneva. So they've now vacated this position at the economic development desk. They're in Geneva. Now, someone else comes back from London, and they're back in South Africa. They're back at Durko. They lose their cost of living allowance because they're no longer in London, and there's a vacant position at the economic development desk. So they go in there. So the agreement that you sign is that you come back to Durko. You can indicate preferences of where you would want to work within Durko, within the diplomatic desk field, but you will also be placed according to where vacancies are. And it's a constant rotation. So when someone goes out, someone comes back in. So there's not a position that's being reserved for someone that's empty for 4 years. When you come back, you're redeployed within the department where there is vacancies for you at the same level that you were at before you went out. There's no redundancies. There's no people that sit and wait for some work to be done, or people that are made redundant because their position is now being taken by another person, because there's this constant rotation of people going out and people coming back in. And while you're out, you get your cost of living allowance, but you're still an employee of the state. You're still an employee of Durko, so you get your salary. And your contract to go out is for 4 years, and then you come back and you're redeployed within Durko.
Okay, but members, say what you are saying, ultimately we must just agree with the proposed formulation they have put before us. Honorable Lisoma?
Probably let me
You were itching to make a follow-up.
No, I just want to have a sense of comfort so that we can move forward. But I need a confirmation administratively. That says that since we agreed earlier on in terms of employment conditions based on the department pay, required skills, let's use that, not redundant in a true sense, like sitting on a desk doing nothing. So that one will be applicable, because you can't place somebody who have got certain skills that are not necessarily in the vacant post. So you are saying then, for me to agree with what is proposed here, you are saying you look at that as well. Because my also worry, Chair, is that you'll end up having a person that is highly skilled, whatever, accordingly skilled but misplaced, and then government doesn't deliver because also all that thing, and also it deals with the performance management, it deals with the other issues and overspill of issues. So the placement of that individual also is taken care of. It's not like as, because I was not saying really in terms of redundancy, in terms of adding value to the institution. If I'm misplaced based on my skills are misplaced, there's an issue for us, for DPSN, DPME. But nevertheless, what I'm saying, but also we are dealing with a person, a warm body. And I will get stressed because he or she can't perform because it's misplaced. I'm saying probably then, if then a confirmation of my understanding intent will take into account to that, I'll be happy.
Now it means the department must confirm what you are saying, that the understanding that you are saying you have. I want to attempt to you'll come on a looking, because I want to deal with this one, this concern. My very simple understanding was that here you are dealing with the employee other than the head of mission. The head of mission is posted abroad for years. When he or she comes back, if that contract, if he or she is not being reposted to another country, it means the job is over, that one. But the employee who was taken to Geneva and then is not renewed back to Geneva, comes back, then he or she will be assigned to another job in the department minus the extra money, but at the same level that they were when they left South Africa. Yes.
Under normal, I agree with it, under normal circumstances, that there's no vacuum that is left, but as the lawyers are saying, that is left because there's that changing of this one to this one, this area. But I'm concerned of what if somebody now, my question is, what if somebody is recalled for personal reasons just before the contract? Now there is that one in the area. Now that one abroad has been recalled due to those reasons, then what is the position there? For what do we do? Because to my understanding now, if it's called the contract there on, is still on, and this one is still on contract also, now what happens then when he comes back now being recalled? Maybe on some reasons, not necessarily disciplinary hearings.
I think members are absolutely correct. It's just that when I look at the issues they are discussing, I think these are matters of policy, which it's within the committee's purview to suggest that they be included in the regulations, to say at least the department should look at this, because in some jurisdictions rotation it's mentioned in the act. To say, foreign service, when you go out, you know that it's on a rotational basis. So you can be rotated back to the department or transferred to another mission from another mission, depending on what the policy in DECO says. But it's a concern which I think it should be noted, and so that it's in the regulations, at least this concern that has been raised by members is captured.
Where ambassadors, so they were ambassadors, and they are here, ambassadors.
Yeah, yeah. Maneng Lama reports. That's why I always say go to this, go to this. It's a bit confusing and taxing. Page 21 is because you've had 1, 2, 3, 4 departments saying something here. You see that? Now the department is responding this way. It says under 3.2. It says the head of a national department must in writing notify the director general of an employee who has approval from that national department to be transferred. One. Then it says number B, no member of the Foreign Service may take up a position at a South African mission until such time that the following Roman figures obtain. One, as he or she has met the prescribed requirements for such transfer. Roman figure two, as he or she has obtained a security clearance as issued by the competent authority, which is state security, and approval for the transfer has been granted by the Director General. Yeah, that is what must be Roman figure 3. And yesterday we have spoken to this to this matter. We say here are these people, they will be going overseas, they will resort under the head of mission with the ambassador. Now, the department, the sending department, must tell the DG that who is defending so and so from Home Affairs, who's going to be doing this and this. And this one must then, the DG here at home in South Africa, must then inform the head of mission that side that Home Affairs will be sending a person who will be doing the following step. And then National Treasury will be doing, sending the same person who will be doing that. And trade and industry will be doing that. Once the ambassador is aware that these people are coming there, then they come there. Then the ambassador is aware of who they are. But we're emphasizing that they are under the authority, if you take the policy of Canada, they are under the authority of the head of mission. If something has happened, the buck stops with the head of the mission to say, go back home, so that they can deal with this matter. But we further said, I think it's not yesterday, some other days, we further said, if this person was coming from Home Affairs, the head of the mission there will say, because of this particular matter, you go back to South Africa. Then when you go back to South Africa, the department that will deal with or will institute disciplinary measures will be the department that sent you in the first instance, which is Home Affairs. So can we agree with this?
Chair, that one you are referring to is we're gonna see with it on clause 5 when it deals with the recall, so that we subdivide the recall in terms of the normal recall of the Israel ambassador vis-a-vis the recall in terms of disciplinary issues.
Yeah.
Okay, but now with what you've just said, have we explicitly put it here that the Director General of DICO will be the sole responsibility? I think it must be explicitly clear. Just like we say at Roman figure 3, that approval for the transfer has been granted by the Director General. Do we also have to say that the Director General of DICO is the one-pen policy guy? The buck stops with, do we put it here or do we put it at 5 at the disciplinary case?
No, we don't put it here because you see, it says approval for the transfer has been granted by the Director General.
Mm.
Ne?
Yeah, that's for transfer. But for the management and the dealing with the all other issues, where you are saying that the ambassador of DECO is the main man. Where do we put it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you get me, content ambassador?
Yeah, because I thought you don't have to put it here, so I thought earlier on, because here already we have defined under definitions who the director general is. It will be obviously the one who accepted the Arkwebo. But lie when we are referring to the director general of the sending department. Oh, okay. Content advisor?
No, this clause refers to the fact that the other departments were saying it shouldn't only be, it was, they were misreading the first draft of the clause to say it was like DECO is the one who's going to actually pinpoint to say we want X from Home Affairs, we want X from. So the department here is trying to address that, to say no, what happens is the departments themselves will still be responsible for identifying talent in their departments to say this is the person we are sending there because of ABCD, whatever criteria they are using. But for one to now go to the mission, the DG of DECO is the one who is going to sign off that person to, you know, to clear him off to go. It's an administrative process. But it was an issue because the other departments were had an understanding that DECO is going to look for people within their own departments. Whereas they are the ones who are going to say, DECO, we give you X for Home Affairs, for visas, for whatever, but the signing off of a person to be transferred will be.
Kalapa is still saying approval for the transfer has been granted by the Director General.
Yes.
He was asking which Director General. Do you want to clarify that? Yes.
Oh, okay. It's for transfer, it's DECO. So the drafters are here.
Hello, Kenya?
And it's in the definitions. Yes, definitely. Director General is under definitions. To say that Director General, when you say Director General in this Act, you are referring to DECO.
So you don't have to repeat it. Yeah. Okay. Hello, Kenya.
No, it's still not clear to me because Dineo is saying they met other departments, and that's why this is here, because of the concern of other departments. Now, when you say Director General. With that director general, can we say maybe we must have look plurals at 32A if we say so, so that you understand the director that belongs to that department, either to say not to say of a national department. Yeah. See, let's remove the rule. So I can remove that A, therefore, so that we encompass all the departments, not to talk about one national department, because it will mean that now. If I say I came canvassing all the departments, when we've got that the head of a national department must in writing, now it doesn't specify which department. So therefore, maybe if you can remove the A, it will mean that you're talking about departments, different departments. When I don't understand, to me it is not clear if you say that you wanted to encompass other departments on the same issue, other data generals of those departments.
Yes, Chairperson. I think the department will also clarify the matter. What I think the member has just now that you are saying national department, maybe since it's not only people from national departments, I don't know if the department will cover will extend the clause to also cover those who come outside national departments but who are being handed over to go on posting. So, but for national departments, it says notify the director general of an employee who has approval from that national department. Yes. So the other question which comes there is that are we only looking at national departments handing over people to DECO or even the ones which are from outside?
That was the question which was, so the department can...
No, the director general, it still means the DICO director general. They have written it in a very legalistic way. They say the head of the national department, which is a DG of Home Affairs, must, in let's put it in real terms, the DG of Home Affairs must in writing notify the DG of DICO of an employee from Home Affairs who has approval from that Home Affairs to be transferred. That's what it means.
He's right, because what she's going beyond what is written here to say that in some instances DICO would get some people who is not necessary from national department, from outside. So she's wanting to know the department to confirm where is that one accommodated, or is it accommodated in between the lines, and we must talk to that.
DG will sign a contract with whoever is going abroad that does not belong to a national department. So that would not be regulated. It's not a public service official then. So that will be regulated by way of a contract, and because the DG is directly involved, that they would not... There would be an approval from the DG, but in a different form than what is envisaged here. Thank you.
Because I want us to agree on this and have a human rights break.
Okay, Sir President. No,
I
was just reminding members on the wording of prescribed requirements. Because the earlier discussions by members, it was, what do you mean by prescribed requirements? Are these requirements enough for people who are going to be posted as officials, to Foreign Service, or prescribed requirements will be in the regulations? I think the committee has to pronounce itself there. If they think this is enough, it's enough, then if they have other issues which can be in the regulations to say people have to qualify, because SAIA, for example, on page 20, it was saying prescribed requirements should specifically mention that taking up position should be subject to successful completion of relevant training requirements. So that if we don't leave it open like it is now on 3, what are those requirements? There, which is security, which is being a citizen, security clearance, and being signed off. What else should one qualify to be?
Member?
Chair, I'll suggest that let's treat it the way we dealt with the issue that we're dealing with in terms of the coming back before the end term and all that, to be accommodated in regulations, because even the issues of qualification, age, if it's a retired person, what happens and all that cannot be in the act. Thank you, Chair.
Regulations, and this, we are so agreed now with this condition. Then, before we go to clause 5B, recall on international, on recall. It's four first. Go to 5-4. Gune Isulani. Head of mission. Okay. We will come back to page 4 of the bill. Head of mission.